Raymond Massey was everyone's Abraham Lincoln for a while in the 1930s, and that applied to the Cavalcade of America when it came to playing Abraham Lincoln in the war years. There were two Carl Sandburg biographies of Lincoln. Actually, it was a two-volume set, The Prairie Years, which, of course, covered Lincoln's youth, relative youth, and then The War Years, which followed him during his presidency, and The War Years from Cavalcade of America includes a very interesting take on the Gettysburg Address. You get some running commentary from some rather casual listeners. It's an effective historical and theatrical device. In Abraham Lincoln, The War Years, Cavalcade of America from February 13th, 1940.
Raymond Massey in Robert Sherwood's great radio classic based on Carl Sandburg's Abraham Lincoln, The War Years, on the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry. Tonight, DuPont takes a special pride in being able to bring you once more the star who made Abraham Lincoln live on stage and screen, and whom Cavalcade has presented twice before in this epic through the medium of radio. For it is a play which does not lose through repetition, but rather gains. And in this time of crisis and storm, may well serve to rededicate every American to the preservation of the indomitable spirit of these United States, just, victorious, and everlasting. Today, we Americans live in a time of great storm, a storm that spreads over all the surface of the earth, a storm that threatens to destroy our homes, our religion, our civilization. Today, we summon all the resources of our strength and our faith, and among these resources is the knowledge that from the beginning, our American history has been a story of courage and enterprise and of victory. 80 years ago, another great storm swept over our land. And the Americans of those dark days still live among us in spirit. Their voices speak to us still. February 11, 1861, 8 o'clock in the morning. A cold drizzle of rain is falling over the Great Western Railway Station in Springfield, Illinois. Inside and around the brick station, 1,000 people have taken off their hats and are looking up at a tall, bearded man on the rear platform of a train.
Friend, today I leave you. I go to assume a task more difficult than that which devolved upon General Washington. Unless the great God who assisted him shall be with me and aid me, I must fail. Permit me to ask that with equal sincerity and faith, you will all invoke his wisdom and guidance for me. With these few words, I must leave you. For how long, I know not. Friends, one and all, I must now bid you an affectionate farewell.
What? All aboard.
Bye.
Bye, Mr. Lincoln.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
At Decatur, they watched from saddle horses.
It's all over now. He'll split the Union worse than he ever did a Sangamon log.
Looks like an undertaker.
Anybody but that abolition ape would be a better president. I still say he should have been Judge Douglas.
At Indianapolis, they stood under darkening skies.
not much to look at. Come on, let's go home. Take your pa's hand.
Come on, Sonny. Martha, it's the worst thing that ever could have happened. Big loon with flapping ears for a president. What's going to happen next?
At Buffalo, they watched, and some waited.
Get a going now with that sword, Jed. You just seen him on that train yourself.
Yeah, hurry up. Can't wait around all night for you to pay off that election bet. Next time, maybe you'll pick a winner.
All right. I'll pay my election bet. But you boys will see I'm right someday. South will have something to say about Abe Lincoln being president. You wait and see. Just wait. There's going to be trouble. Plenty of trouble.
February 21st, 1861, Philadelphia, in a hotel parlor.
Well, here you are, Abe. I'm mighty glad to see you.
Thank you, Norman. If my journey keeps going on at the slow rate it has so far, it'll be Resurrection Day before I reach the Capitol.
Well, anyway, in a few days' time, you'll be president. Abe, the country wants to know how you're going to stop secession.
I can't answer him yet.
Who's that?
Man's outside, sir. Wants to see you, Mr. Judd, and the president.
All right, Abe?
Yes. Let him come in.
Very well, boy.
This way, sir.
Gentlemen, my name's Alan Pinkerton. I'm a railroad detective. I have to tell you, Mr. Lincoln, that there's a plot to assassinate you when you arrive in Baltimore. The ringleader's a man named Fernandina.
Probably just another one of those fanatics.
But he has a strong group of followers. They're well armed. They're desperate. And, Mr. Lincoln, they're killers.
You're their enemy, Abe. You know that there are many who will do anything to prevent you.
Be quiet, General.
Oh, I thought you were alone.
Good evening, Mrs. Lincoln.
It's just a little political discussion, Mary. That'll be all, gentlemen. I'll give your suggestions my most serious consideration.
Very good, sir.
I'll see you later, Abe. Good day, Mrs. Lincoln.
Good day, gentlemen.
Good day.
Good day.
Abe, what were they talking about?
They were just talking about political appointment.
Oh, Abe, I'm frightened.
Frightened of what?
Of everything that may come to us. Civil war.
There's nothing to be scared of, Mary. We may have a pretty rough road ahead of us, but we'll pull through.
Everything's working as we planned, Mr. Lincoln.
Fine, Mr. Pinkerton.
Taking this special train will get us to Baltimore long before you're scheduled to pass through. The town will be asleep. We're leaving any minute now.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. I guess I'll get some sleep. Good night, sir.
Good night, Mr. Lincoln.
On the eve of his inauguration, Abraham Lincoln escaped assassination by secretly arriving in the national capital. They said it was degrading for a president to come like a thief in the night and make the American people the laughingstock of the entire world. But the incident was soon lost in the swirl of ominous events that engulfed the new family in the White House.
Abe, it's just as I keep telling you. You've got to take a stand.
What stand do you mean, Mary?
You must show the country you're determined to keep the states united. You have to do something about it. You have to, right away.
I know it, Mary. I know I will. Please, but don't let's talk about it now. Here come the children. Well, Willie, what do you and Tad think of your new home?
We were just telling Robert we'd never seen such a big house. It's twice as big as Uncle Ninian's in Springfield. Look, Willie, look at the paintings.
John Adams, Thomas Jefferson,
George Washington. Hey, Pa.
Yes, Tad. What is it, son?
Do you suppose they'll ever hang a picture of you here?
Well, I'll tell you, son. After reading the papers lately, I doubt it.
Oh, don't believe him, Pa. Hey, Pa, now that you're president, can I have a pony?
Tell you what, Willie. We'll have to ask Congress about that.
Robert.
Yes, Mother?
Take the children up on the lawn. They can play there.
Very well, Mother. Come on, you two.
Will you ask Congress about the pony, Pa?
Can't we go down to Congress right now?
We'll see about it later, Willie. Don't play too hard now, so you'll be all tuckered out. Well, Mary, I think that Willie is looking better at that. Maybe we should buy him that pony.
Abe, I tell you again, The situation is serious. What are you going to do about Fort Sumter?
I don't know, Mary. It's hard to know what to do about it. I've got to try to figure it out.
You are listening to Raymond Massey in Abraham Lincoln, The War Years, by Robert E. Sherwood on The Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry. As the play continues, Lincoln is addressing his cabinet.
Gentlemen, I've called this meeting of the cabinet to discuss the serious situation in Charleston. It is proposed that this government send relief to Fort Sumter. Do you think we should do it, Mr. Seward?
No, I do not. Such an action would lead us directly into a civil war.
What about you, Mr. Chase?
If it means war, I agree with Mr. Seward.
You, Mr. Cameron?
Let the people of South Carolina have Fort Sumter. Let us have peace.
Mr. Blair, what is your opinion?
If we fail to come to the defense of Fort Sumter, we may as well shut up shop as a self-respecting government. We must send relief, even if it does mean war.
Mr. Wells.
I disagree heartily with Mr. Blair.
Mr. Smith.
I vote no on sending relief.
Mr. Bates.
My vote is the same. Evacuate Fort Sumter. If the South wants to secede and form a new nation, let them do it.
Our course is clear, Mr. President. The sentiment of this cabinet is virtually 6-1 in favor of evacuation of Fort Sumter.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for giving me the benefit of your opinion. But the final responsibility rests on me.
Yes, Mr. President. And your first duty is to preserve peace.
My first duty is to preserve this Union. And my policy must be governed by the dictates of my own conscience as to what is right. I shall give orders at once to the Army and Navy to send relief to Fort Sumter. Citizens of the Senate and House of Representatives, Fort Sumter has been attacked and bombarded and has fallen. This action has forced upon the country the distinct issue, immediate dissolution or blood. This issue embraces more than the fate of these United States. It presents to the whole family of man the question whether a constitutional republic or democracy, a government of the people, by the same people, can or cannot maintain its territorial integrity. It forces us to ask, is there in all republics this inherent and fatal weakness? Must a government of necessity be too strong for the liberties of its own people, or too weak to maintain its own existence? Gentlemen, we cannot escape history. We of this Congress and this administration will be remembered in spite of ourselves. We shall nobly save or meanly lose the last best hope of earth.
Where we, Abe?
You can count on us, Abe.
We're coming, Abe.
We're coming.
Hi, Abe.
Mississippi's winding stream and from New England's shore. We leave our crowds and workshops, our wives and children dear, with hearts too full for utterance, with God a silent tear. We dare not look behind us, but steadfast.
Abraham Lincoln was confronted with a divided nation rent asunder in tragic civil war. And as the months of fear and anxiety passed, many mistrusted Abraham Lincoln, scorned him, hated him, refused to fight under his leadership. And as the clouds of war darkened a nation, a personal sorrow was deepening in the heart of the gaunt figure in the White House.
Pa?
Yes, Willie?
I want to see my pony. When can I see him, Pa?
You'll see him soon, Willie. Yes, son, but first you got to get well.
Stay with me a while, will you, Pa?
Yes, I will. Close your eyes and go to sleep. How is he, Doctor? I want the truth. How is he?
Come over here, Mr. President. We're doing all we can.
You've got to save his life. Doctor, you've got to.
We're trying. That's all we can do now. Try, Mr. President.
I understand. Thank you, Doctor. You mustn't give way, Mary. I know. I know how hard it is. Sometimes I feel I can never be glad again. But we've got to keep our sorrow to ourselves.
That's one thing to be thankful for. I'd rather have him go this way than have him killed in this horrible war. It's so cruel. It's so senseless. Brother fighting against brother. My own brothers are fighting on the southern side against
Mary,
us.
I wish you would not speak of that.
Why not, Abe? Why shouldn't I speak of it? They belong to me, just as Willie did. And I'm afraid. What's going to happen? To me, Abe. To you, to all of us in this war. 2.5 years of it. And nothing but deceit and dying and misery and chaos. Stop it now, Abe. It won't get any better. It'll be worse and worse. There's no hope for us. Do you hear me, Abe?
Yes, Mary. I hear you. And I reckon every boy in the field, every man in the shop, every woman at home has heard these things sometime in their hearts. But stop it, Mary. This war is being fought by the people. They have faith in what they're fighting for, what they're dying for. They have faith in victory for a just cause. I cannot stop that faith, Mary. I would not if I could.
The people's faith in victory, their confidence in their president, were sorely tried on many battlefields. And then on a chill, gray November day in 1863, the president was sitting on a platform on Cemetery Hill in Gettysburg, listening to an oration by Edward Everett. It was an oration. It lasted 2 hours. But the crowd there loved it.
Speech I like. Big words. And old Everett sure knows how to use them.
47 years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty, and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
Say, old Abe's talking
now. We are engaged in
can't understand him, can you?
It don't make much difference if we do. Abe can't hold a candle to Edward Everett as an orator.
So dedicated.
But come on, let's try and get closer.
Yeah.
We are met on a great battlefield.
Well, I tell you. Old Abe ain't so bad, you know. But he certainly picked the wrong time to be president.
For those who here gave their lives that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this.
Like the apple?
But in a larger sense. Thanks. We cannot dedicate. We cannot consecrate. We cannot hallow this
ground. The crop this year ain't so good.
The brave men living and dead who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here. But it can never forget what they did.
Say,
it is
did you hear what he said just then?
No, what was it?
He said nobody would remember what he's saying here.
Well, he hit the nail on the head that time.
It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us. That from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. That this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom. And that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Well, guess he's finished.
Yeah, he's finished. Come on, let's go home.
There were many who did not understand and appreciate the meaning of Lincoln's words at Gettysburg that day. But their portent and message have outlived the tragedy and chaos of those four sorrowful years. And on March 4th, 1865, Abraham Lincoln was inaugurated for the second time.
With malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we are in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations.
April 14, 1865, was Good Friday. It was a lovely spring day in Washington, and the President and Mrs. Lincoln went for a stroll.
Day, Mr. President.
Good day, sir.
Good day there, boys. What's your regiment, son?
157 New York Volunteers, Mr. President.
Oh, yes, Colonel Brown's regiment. And you, Sonny, what's yours?
5th Michigan Cavalry, Mr. President.
That's fine. Well, it's all over now, boys. You'll be getting home soon, and there'll be a heap of work for all of us to do.
That's right, Mr. President.
Goodbye, boys.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. You know, Mary, it's been a hard time for the people.
It's been a hard time for us, Abe.
And I tell you, when my term of office is over, we'll go back to Illinois and pass the rest of our lives in quiet. I'll take up law practice again, just as if nothing had happened. It'll be good to be among our own neighbors again.
Do you think people will ever feel really happy again, Abe?
Yes, Mary. People get over these things if they try, even when they haven't much heart for it.
Well, you say that now, but when I proposed going to the theater tonight, you didn't have much heart for it.
Well, maybe we shouldn't feel like that, Mary. Maybe it'll do us good. It's been a long time since we've been able to sit back and enjoy a real good laugh.
The same night, the presidential box in Ford's office.
Mr. Trenchard, you will please recollect you are addressing my daughter and in my presence. Augusta, dear, to your room.
Yes, Ma. The nasty beast.
Gracious, Abe. Whatever will they be thinking? My hanging on to yourself.
They won't think anything about it. Now listen, Mary.
I'm aware, Mr. Trenchard, you are not used to the manners of good society. And that alone will excuse the impertinence of which you have been guilty.
Don't know the manners of good society, eh? Well, I guess I know enough to turn you inside out, old gal. You sock-dologizing old man trap.
Sic semper tyrannis!
There was a funeral. It took long to pass its many given points. Many millions of people saw it. The line of march ran 1,700 miles. Yes, there was a funeral. From his White House in Washington, where it began, they carried his coffin and followed it nights and days for 12 days. Bells tolling, bells sobbing the requiem, the salute guns, cannon rumbling their inarticulate thunder. To Springfield, Illinois, the old hometown, the Sangamon nearby, the New Salem hilltop nearby, for the final rest of the cherished dust. And the night came with great quiet, and there was rest. The prairie years, the war years, were over.
Thus, in the closing words of Carl Sandburg's immortal testament to the great emancipator, the cavalcade of America's dramatization of Abraham Lincoln comes to a close. To Raymond Massey and the cavalcade players, to Robert E. Sherwood and Carl Sandburg, our thanks. And to Harcourt Brace, the publishers of Abraham Lincoln, The War Years, the sponsors of Cavalcade of America extend their grateful thanks for the cooperation which made this program possible. Week on the Cavalcade of America, our star will be Miss Merle Oberon in a dramatization of her great screen success, The Dark Angel. At this time, every man and woman in America is asking, what can I do to help win the war? One way is to buy more and more defense bonds. To make it convenient for the employees of DuPont to buy bonds, a plan has been inaugurated whereby an employee may set aside voluntarily for this purpose any portion of his or her earnings desired through wage and salary deductions. This plan for buying bonds is a convenient method of regular saving. At the same time, it assures the employee that he is making a further contribution to the national war effort. In connection with Raymond Massey's appearance on tonight's Cavalcade, DuPont is pleased to inform his many admirers that he will soon be seen in his new film, Dangerously They Live. Remember next Monday night, Merle Oberon in The Dark Angel. The orchestra and original musical score on tonight's broadcast were under the direction of Don Voorhees. This is Clayton Collier sending best wishes from DuPont.
The program came to you from New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Cavalcade of America, with Abraham Lincoln, The War Years, inspired by Carl Sandburg's two-part biography of America's 16th president. Tonight's story came from February 13th, 1940. We'll jump forward 10 years for a case for Dr. Kildare, as old-time radio drama continues right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.